Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God for that and some wonderful sponsors and men in my life. It is good to be back. It's good to be back home. I was traveling for about almost a couple of weeks. Went to Virginia and Bethesda, Maryland, and then out to Los Angeles and Anaheim, California. Went to meetings at all those places, a convention in one of those places, met some really neat people. But it's really good to be home. It really is, back here with you guys. I missed everybody here. Missed my the guys I hang around with. And, you know, I'm a creature of habit. And I, you know, you start thinking, you know, I guess when you're younger or something, that wouldn't it be fun to fly all over the place and do this and do that and go to fancy hotels and, you know, eat out and all that stuff. But I got to tell you something. Quite frankly, I'd prefer just to be home and come on over here and go to my regular meetings and things like that. And that's okay for me. I live a pretty simple life now as far as that's concerned. But you get to meet people that you wouldn't meet before, different points of view and things like that. And that was good. And we're on step seven. I'm going to do a little review. And I think when I left, I know a lot of you are coming back. I think when we left off, we were at Valley Forge somewhere. Or somewhere with George Washington's troops or something. Well, if you're not, if you didn't hear that one, I suppose it's on the internet and rocketed.org or something. You can listen to it. But in any event, I want to take off from that point. We were talking about last time, step six. I know Peter did a great job. I want to thank him for doing a wonderful job in standing in for me last week. And I just want to, you know, I haven't had a drink in a while, and, you know, a little over 31 years. And I've unlearned a lot. I'm like these guys in the big book. I know but a little. But I've unlearned a lot. You know, I've become wonderfully not that bright. So, you know, there was a time in my life, I'm 63 years old, married 31 years, four kids, six grandkids, and there was a time in my life, I do remember a time in my life where I knew everything. I knew everything. And I was actually running the planet. I was undercover running the planet in my mind. That whole deal didn't work out real well for me. When you have to run the planet, when everything just has to be perfect, you know what I mean? And you got to make sure everything's perfect so you don't get hurt. It's a very difficult job. I mean, you guys, you know, it's very difficult to do that, to make everybody do exactly the way you want them to do it and think exactly the way you want them to think it and make everything turn out okay, because you know you got to do that because otherwise you'll get hurt. And, you know, drinking helped a lot. It helps to drink when you're running the planet, and it didn't work out too well for me. So what will happen is alcohol has a tendency, if you drink enough alcohol and you get addicted to that deal, you know, it's really but a symptom. I didn't know it was a symptom. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And that's what it did for me. It did something great for me. It helped me to live life. It helped me to feel okay. It relieved the fear. I didn't even know I was in fear. You know, until I didn't even realize why I drank. I didn't think I was scared of women. Well, why'd I drink whenever I'd have to be around women in a social situation? I didn't think I was scared of people. Why'd I always have to get drunk when I was around people? And I was just scared. I just didn't know what scared felt like. I knew what drunk felt like. It felt a lot better than sober. And I ultimately realized that the real problem if you're an alcoholic is being sober. I mean, you drink so... I drank because I was awake. I drank not to be sober, you know. I mean, if you're an alcoholic, your real problem is sobriety. But, of course, you don't realize that until you're 3 or 4 months sober and you're 3 o'clock in the morning, you're sucking on the muzzle of a gun, and you haven't had a drink in 3 months, but your mind's ganging up on you, and you're going crazy, and you don't know what the heck's going to happen to you, and you're scared, and you're saying things like, now I know why I drank. And you understand what alcoholism is. And the problem with alcoholism is after you stop drinking, the disease continues. You know, because if you don't have alcoholism, if you just have a drinking problem, then I'm going to save you a lot of time and a lot of money. Just stop drinking. And everything will be wonderful. But if you're like me, if you got the same disease I got that centers in your mind, not your body, you know, even after you stop drinking, that's when the disease really gangs up on you. And you really start going crazy. And what's crazy is, you know, it took me maybe 15 years to realize I was an alcoholic. And how did I realize I was an alcoholic? Because I was smart? No, because when I was smart, I was the drunkest guy in the bar. I realized I was an alcoholic when I became totally disassembled and deconstructed, and I became and I was beaten down enough so that I finally said, "Uncle, I give up." Well, how many years do you think it takes to realize that you're not drinking alcohol, but you're drinking relationships, you're drinking people, you're drinking money, you're drinking credit cards, you're drinking, you know, there's a lot, you know, alcohol drinking is but a symptom of our disease, but trust me, there are many, many, many symptoms of alcoholism that have absolutely nothing to do with drinking alcohol. They may have to do with gossip. You know, gossip is a symptom of our disease. You know, talking about other people behind their back is a symptom of our disease. You know, worry is a symptom of our disease. You know, feeling sorry for yourself, drinking of self-pity, you know, that's a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. Anything that disturbs you is disturbing to you. You know, anything you use to make yourself feel better outside of relationship with God is a symptom of our disease. And, you know, if you don't have that primary relationship going, if you don't discover what really is the deal in here, what they're really talking about here, which gives you the true freedom and the true happiness, the true independence, you will latch on to something else. You'll try to manage your own life, and you'll think that's the nature. If I could just manage better, and you know, what does it say in the book? It says we can't manage our own life. You'll try to look for a man or a woman, a husband, a wife, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a boss, a job, thinking that'll fix you, and you'll get the job, and you know something? It'll make it worse. It'll make it worse, because then you'll spend the rest of your life. Because if you find the perfect job, you know what you'll do? You'll spend the rest of your life investing all your life and everything in the job, and all you do is worry about the job and talk about the job, and you'll be going to a lot of discussion meetings talking about your boss or talking about the money or stuff like that. Anything you latch onto to make yourself feel better has got you hostage. So how do you live in a world when everything you feel about yourself depends upon what, not what's going on inside, but what's going on outside, what your external circumstances are? That's why alcoholics say a lot of things like, if only. We live if only life. You know, if only my wife, if only my boss, if only I had more money. It's always if only, if only, if only, if only. And isn't it funny, even when we get the if onlys, there's always another if only. You know, but we don't realize it because the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-governed right, though he usually doesn't think so. So we say things like, yes, but. So when the truth is, confronts us and when a sponsor comes up and says, here's the truth about your deal, we say, yes, but. Which means I'm not even listening to you. Because I'm just that brilliant. So if it took me, I don't know how many years, to finally admit that I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable, imagine how many years it's taken me to realize my life was unmanageable and powerless over a lot of other symptoms I have, a lot of other deals I had. You know, and so I really spent, I guess, the first 20 years. I'm still doing it. I don't want you to think I graduated. I'm still deconstructing. I've spent many, many years learning unlearning things that I thought I knew for sure. You know, when you get to the point where you unlearned everything, you don't know anything for sure, then the only thing you do is rely on God, which is basically what this book says. Your real reliance has to be on Him. As Maverick says, managing your own life won't do it. Looking for other people won't do it. Only God could and would if He was sought. It's all about God. And so everything I talk about, whatever step I'm on, whatever step we're doing, it's all about investing in a relationship with Him. That's where true independence comes. It has to do with Him. I like to simplify things. I like to get things real simple. You know what I mean? The longer I study this book, now I have the book in front of me, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll read from that. I've got Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and I've got the 12 and 12. I think they're three essential books. I think the book that's mostly overlooked is Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and it's one of the most important books, and I really started studying it when I had about 15 years. And I just suggest everybody get a hold of Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and start reading that book. I think that I think that's where you really start getting some knowledge and you start filling in the gaps of this thing. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous started in 1935, and the big book was written in 1939. The big book is considered our basic text. That's the basic text that we all supposedly agree upon. Of course, that's assuming that people really have read the book and they understand the book. And I'm not purporting to say I understand everything about the book. But the bottom line is we all know it was published in 1939. There are a little over 100 alcoholics that were sober at that time. And we all know that Alcoholics Anonymous started in 1935. There's no argument about that. Alcoholics Anonymous was going on for 4 years. Before the big book was written. At every meeting you go to, and I'm going to talk a little history here, at every meeting you go to, they start off by reading how it works. Whenever they start off reading how it works, they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I don't think I can be contradicted on that. All over the United States, all over the world, they say, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. In other words, if you do what we did, you'll get what we got. Now, I can't get any simpler than that. Now, I understand alcoholics can screw up the most simplest thing. Like when my wife said to me, you come home drunk one more time, I'm going to leave you. And I walked out the door and drove 2 blocks and I said, well, what the hell does she mean by that? So I get the fact that you could say the simplest thing, you know, a judge could say to an alcoholic, I see you one more time, you're going to jail. And the alcoholic walks out and says, well, what the hell is that all about? You know what I mean? It's like it's confusing. Because when an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him. And he tries to fill it in with his own thinking, you know, which has something to do with, I don't want to do it that way, I want to do it my way, which never turns out okay. But the bottom line, it says, rarely have I seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. It's very simple. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got. You'll get what we got. And then it says later on, you know, if you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So you're not even ready to take the steps unless you want what they have. If you want what we have, you're willing to do anything they tell you to do. And that's when the fun begins, because now that you're sober, you don't really want to do any of the stuff they wanted to do. That's why we balk at everything. We change everything around. And when anybody tries to tell us differently, we say, hey, it's an individual. That's my program. You got your program. I got my program. Like there's two different programs. Like there's 17,000 different programs. You know? And that's why only 0.5% stay sober for more than 20 years. Now, I don't know what the real percentage is, but I think it's about 0.5%. And I believe that's true. I've been around for 31 years, and I've seen what's going on in the room. The AA's been around for what, like 80 years? You should have like 20, 30 guys with 30, 40 years in here. We've been around a long time, you know. There are the guys with 30 years, guys with 20 years is about as rare as hen's teeth. You go to my room, the Carl room, they have a chart on the board. All rooms have this. They have a chart on the board, they got like 20 names. Carl, Joanne, Joan, John has 1 year. You know, Felix, Fred, you know, Steve has 3 years. This one, and they have this little chart with people, and then it says, they add up the time, and it says, 375 years of sobriety. It says, man, everybody's staying sober. But you see, what I would do, if I was doing it, because I believe we have to live in the truth, we have to live in the truth, is what I would do is, instead of having a rectangular board, I would spread it out along the top of the wall. I would have a long, long sort of board, and I would have 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, four, all the way up to 40 years. And if you did it that way, what you would see is this. You would see under 1 year you'd have 3 or 4 names. Under 2 years you'd have 3 or 4 names. Under 3 years you'd have 1 name. Under 4 years you'd have 2 names. Under 5 years you'd have 3 names. Under 6 years, none. 7 years you'd have 1. 8 years, 1. 9 years, maybe none. 10 years, maybe none. 11 years, 1. 12 years, 1. 13, 14, 15 years, 1 on 15. 16, 17, 18, 19, there'd be none. Then on 20, there'd be 1. And then between 20 and 30, you'd have none. And then maybe at 32, you'd have 1. And you look at that thing and you'd see huge gaps. Like nobody was staying sober. Nobody was picking up white chips in those years. And you'd see what's really going on here. You know, it's like when I was in law school, you know, they'd say, look to your right and your left. One of these guys aren't going to be here. You'd see there's a tremendous drop-off rate. And I was sitting at a table with 3 guys the other day. I said this last week. One guy's drank at 7 years. One guy drank at 15 years. One guy drank in 12 years. I mean, they happen to make it back. They have some time now. But it's amazing. Not only the guys that, forget about whether you drink or not, how many guys do I sponsor that 14, 15, 16 years that are hanging in there? They're hanging in there. They're hanging in there. How's it going? I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there. One day at a time, you know? Just take the muzzle out of my mouth. You know what I mean? And what did they have? They say, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length, then what did they have? Well, this is sort of like what they had. They talk about what they had in here. They say right here, let's see what we got right here. It says, they give you a little snippet as to what we have. Here it is right here. It says, we have found much, this is page 25, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. That's what I want to talk about. That's what, in every step I do, all I want to talk about is finding much of heaven and being rocketed, because you're all sober. You all figured out how not to drink. I want to talk about whether you found much of heaven and you've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. That's what I want to talk about. Now, you may not be interested in finding much of heaven or being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which you would not even dream. And therefore, you know, this little talk is not going to mean much to you. I'm not your guy. You got to find the guy who says something like, put the plug in the jug and, you know, just don't drink. One of those deals, you know. And they're all over the place in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I'm spiritual, not religious. And don't listen to that guy, you know. But I want to talk about what they had. And here's the deal. If they wrote in 1939, if you want what we have and are willing to go into any length to get it, you do what we did, you get what we got, you know one thing. You know the one thing they weren't doing. We know what they weren't doing. They weren't reading the big book. You get that, don't you? You know, because if you really don't get that, it's a whole different, you got to go to a whole different class. They weren't reading the big book. Did you hear me? They weren't reading the 12 and 12. They weren't reading Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And you know what else they weren't doing? They weren't doing the steps. Now, they were doing the steps, but they didn't call them the steps, and they didn't look like the steps. They weren't doing what we're doing in here. And they certainly weren't doing what we're mostly doing in AA throughout the country now. Now, there's two types of wisdom that you're going to find in here, and I've learned this after 31 years. There's the wisdom of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and then there's what I lovingly call the wisdom of the rooms. The wisdom of the rooms sounds like this. I'm spiritual, not religious, you know. I'm a recovering Catholic. I'm this, that, you know. Now, the wisdom of the book says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. See, what AA is about, it's about embracing religion, embracing clergymen. If you read this, it says a well-loved clergyman gave us the standards. You know, the clergymen were the ones that really guided Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. You see, that's what you read about if you know a little bit about the history and you actually do the second step and lose closed-mindedness. But the wisdom of the rooms is if you even talk about it, they don't want to hear it. We don't talk about that stuff in here. So you got to decide whether you want to deal with the wisdom of the rooms. By the way, I don't know whether you noticed, this is not Well People's Anonymous. Whether you want to deal with the guy who's, you know, the craziest son of a gun who talks the loudest in the rooms, you know what I mean? Or you want to deal with what's really going on in the book Alcoholics Anonymous and do this deal. You know, because remember, we don't have any, you know, in the old days, they used to have, if you read about the old days, they used to have a screening committee. You know that in the old days, they wouldn't let you in a meeting until you went upstairs in the upper room and got on your knees and gave your life to God. Did you know that? You couldn't get in. You had to surrender. You had to do what's called the surrender and give your life to God. Then they let you in the meetings. As a matter of fact, in the old days, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stay sober. You know, as we got bigger and bigger and they wanted more and more people, they didn't want to offend anybody. They took out because we're all codependent. So the God forbid somebody should get mad at us and walk out. So, you know, God forbid, he may poison the room, but we wouldn't want him to leave, you know. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, so we took out the word honest. Now the only requirement for membership is, you know, a desire to stay sober. You don't have to have an honest desire because it was like too high a bar for us. So this meeting, it's sort of like been constantly sort of watered down. That's sort of like our nature. You know, the alcoholic nature is not only are we addicted to alcohol, we're addicted to people liking us and loving us, and we're addicted to being accepted. That's why we always think, you know, what do I look like? What do I smell like? You know, comparing our insides to other people's outsides, why don't they like me? What are they thinking about me? That whole deal that you run the filter through, if I do this, what do they think? If I do that, if I say this, what do I think? That whole deal that you got going for yourself all the time is all about wanting people to love you. So even though, so forget about right or wrong, it's what can I do so that people will like me? So that I'll be accepted and they'll think I'm an okay guy because, you know, basically, you know, I have no other way of measuring myself than what you think about me. Because I don't think I'm much. You know, as far as self-esteem goes, I have none of it. You know, I don't think I'm much. So the only way I can gauge about who I am and what I am is basically what you think about me. That's why I have to have a new car and a new this and a trophy wife or whatever the heck I have, because as far as I'm concerned, in my eyes, I'm a nothing. I always was going to be a nothing. I always was a nothing. I used to put something in my body that turned me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost the top of the world. And that's why I drank alcohol, so I wouldn't be a nothing. And so the bottom line is, so I'm reading this book, you know, this book, and this book says, rarely have I seen a person fail, has thoroughly followed our path. And the path was what they did during the first 4 years. And that's all mapped out in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. So I'm going to read you a few things. We'll take about 10 minutes to go through this. A few things up to and through the seventh step, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the seventh step. Let's see whether you can see a pattern here. You know, because I think it's time and around the seventh step, because we separated the men from the boys, right? This is where we separated the men. The sixth step is where we separated the men from the boys, so we don't have, so the boys aren't here anymore. All we got is men and ladies and women, and, you know, that's the deal. That's what we talk about, Valley Forge, Sunshine Patriot, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we got here the people who are serious. You know, they say in the back of the big book, we talked about this last time, they said, not everybody is welcome here, only ones who mean business. They were serious people. So I want to read you some stuff from this book, okay? And I'm going to start off on page 25. I'm going to flip through this thing, see whether you can see a pattern here. And this is throughout all the steps, throughout the entire book, up to 164 of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's consistent. It always stays the same. Okay, and let's see whether you can figure out a common denominator here. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing else, nothing less. I want to point out what they say is the great fact is just this and nothing less, which means the great fact is just this and nothing less. Now listen. One of the problems, you know, I get people that come up to me all the time after I do these things. They say, oh, I really liked when you said this. Boy, it really meant so much when you said this. And they give me credit for, like, reading something out of the big book. And I'll say to them, I'll say, you mean when I read that thing out of the big book? And I said, yeah, when you read that part, where is that part, right? When you read that. I said, well, that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. You know what I mean? And I understand that. Because when you sort of like scanning through things and looking through things and deciding what you like and you don't like, you read it, but you don't really read it. You read it and you don't really know what it means. You're not really thinking about what they're saying. And then one day when you're beaten down long enough and you become open-minded enough, some guy says the same thing you've been reading for the last 10 years, and all of a sudden you said, man, that's deep. And it's been there all along, but you never really read it. So you got people in here who think they've read the big book. They haven't really read the big book, because what they think the big book is about is acceptance is the answer to all our problems. If somebody on the street said, well, what's this big book about? He says, well, it's about acceptance. It's the answer to all our problems. And acceptance isn't the answer to all our problems. I mean, it's a good thing. It could be the answer to a lot of your problems when you first come on, but sometimes it's courage. It's always faith. You know, it's not just acceptance. Okay, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, now I want you to listen to this, the central fact of our lives today, now you know what that means, right? That means the central fact of their lives today, now this is very important, the central fact of their lives today is the absolute certainty, I want you to listen to these words, these aren't my words, you don't like them, if they piss you off, well first of all, if anything I say pisses you off, you know what the spiritual axiom in here is, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with you. So I pissed you off, you know, I've actually done you a favor. It's like a spiritual MRI. You owe me like a copayment. You need to work on that and figure out why I pissed you off. You know, the way it works is I'll walk out of here, I won't even realize I pissed you off. You'll be thinking about me for 16 weeks, you know what I mean? Damn Russell. And you'll either drink or go crazy or be a thumb-sucking crybaby or be hanging in there, or you'll inventory it out. You'll say, you know, Russell said this, you know, it hurt my self-esteem, who does he think he is? You'll go to your sponsor, you'll pray about it, and all of a sudden, you'll have some sort of epiphany. You'll say, that's why he pissed me off, because I don't like when people talk about God and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, you realize the same thing that pisses you off about me is what pissed you off about your damn ex-wife, and that's why you got a divorce, and pissed you off about this person. All of a sudden, you won't be pissed at me anymore. You won't be pissed at your ex-wife anymore. You won't be pissed about 15,000 people that always piss you off. And all of a sudden, you'll start feeling better. You'll start feeling better about yourself. You'll say, this is unbelievable. This is great. And you run into me in a room 6 years from now, you say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. And that's the way Alcoholics Anonymous works, okay? So it works. First, you got to get pissed off. You know what I mean? Because that gives you the indication as to what's wrong with you. Because you get upset because you're upsettable. Until you understand why you're upsettable and why things are upsetting, you're going to keep on getting upsettable all over and over again about the same stuff. And the whole key to this whole thing about, which is ultimately about humility before God, is to not be upsettable and not let anything bother you. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty. I mean, they put this down in writing, the absolute certainty. I mean, I believe that they were telling the truth. They're absolutely certain that our Creator, with a capital C. They're talking about God. They're talking about a deity. They're not talking about the doorknob. I'm sorry. I mean, you tell me all. No, unless you want to say, yes, I was created by a doorknob. That our Creator was entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. And later on in the promises, which you read all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So the central factor of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator is living in our hearts and minds in a miraculous manner. Our Creator, that's the central fact. So that's the thing you think about all the time. That's the thing that's on your mind all the time. All you think about is your Creator, how He's living in your heart and how He's living for you. Which sort of explains why when Bill Wilson said to Bill D., the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I want to keep on talking about it and telling other people. And that was the golden text for Bill D. We'll see that later on. We see how it all works out. It all fits in the people picture that these guys were focused on their Creator. They were focused on God. They were focused on a relationship with God, which is probably why the 11th step says we improve our relationship with God. That's what we work on once we get here. You know, that's the deal. Now, I know we're not supposed to talk about an AA because the wisdom of the room say you're not supposed to talk about God. Now, that's what the wisdom of the room say, okay? The wisdom of the rooms will get you drunk real fast or get you feeling crummy real fast. And then you turn to the next spot. We're going to keep on going, page 28. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator, there He is again, with whom we may form a relationship, that's the R word, relationship, upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established this relationship with God. You probably thought an AA talk is about drunkalogue, how much we drank and all the problem we got in and all the humorous stuff. No, that's not what an AA talk is about. What an AA talk is about is how you establish your relationship with God. And that's according to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then we'll go on. Let's keep on going here. Let's see what else they have to say. And by the way, even though I'm reading these, certain things I picked out, you know that there are a lot of things I'm leaving out. You know, there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. I think they were serious. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. We're alcoholics and we can't manage our own lives. No human power could relieve our alcoholism, but God could and would if he were sought. Being convinced, we are now at step three, being convinced of those three things, that God can and could and would if he were sought. Is there like a pattern forming here? Okay, we keep on going. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, they retaliate. So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. The alcoholic is an extreme example of self-overrun riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It's above everything. We got to get rid of selfishness. We must overcome. God makes that possible. God makes that possible. Not even doing the steps makes that possible. Not even a sponsor makes that possible. Not even doing the next right thing makes that possible. They could have said that. Not even going to meetings. Not even meetings don't even make that possible. I can't even make that possible. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore. Do the next right thing is a moral or philosophical conviction. You know, it's a life plan. Do the next. Hey, how can you argue against do the next right thing? It's like mother and apple pie. No, do the next wrong thing. But if I could do the next right thing over and over again, I wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, somehow, for some reason, it just doesn't seem right that I should give back the money. You know what I mean? I just can figure out a million different reasons why I should keep the money. I don't know. You know, many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying. On our own power, we had to have God's help. We had to have his help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereinafter, in a drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. He is the principal, and we are his agents. He is the father. We are the children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we pass the freedom. This is the main deal. This is the keystone. This is the main thing. This is the great fact. Great fact, keystone. First of all, this is the first thing we have to do. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things follow. Now, do you want to be hanging in there? Or do you want remarkable things? See, the relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Do you want great events to come to pass for you and countless others? Do you want remarkable things happening? Or do you want to be 20 years sober and hanging in there? Which one do you want? Do you want the regular card or do you want the gold card? I mean, which deal do you want in this thing, okay? When sincerely took such people, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's all-powerful, which means he's not a higher power. He's the highest power. Only one. He's the highest power. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. This is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is our basic text. This is, in my opinion. He will give you everything you need if you keep close to him and performed his work well. So when the guy comes up to me, my sponsor, and he says, Sally doesn't like me anymore, and she stopped sleeping with me, I say, somehow, I don't think whether or not you get laid tonight has anything to do with performing his work well. So the next time you start worrying and crying and sucking your thumb and feeling sorry for yourself and wanting some discussion meeting about something to do with you, ask yourself this question. Does this have anything to do with performing God's work and knowing what he wants me to do, or does this have to do with what I want because I'm a selfish, self-centered little crybaby? And when you answer that question, you'll know exactly what the deal is. And when the answer is it's because I'm a selfish, self-centered crybaby, you'll stop concentrating on that and say, okay, what is his will for me? Which may mean to suffer without a cell phone. It may mean not to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It may mean not to have a wife. It may be to focus on helping other people instead of worrying about what your sex life is. It may mean a lot of things. That means a little suffering, a little hardship for you, or not getting your own way. But then you'll decide whether you're going to be a man or a boy in here, what's important, what's not important, or whether you're going to continue to be an 8-year-old child, emotionally innate. Then you'll decide whether or not you're serious about this stuff. So where the heck? Oh, yeah, here we are. We provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. You get peace of mind. You have power coming in. You discover you face life successfully. You become conscious of his presence, whoever he is, his presence. We began to lose fear today, tomorrow, and hereafter. We were reborn. Hey, does it have a religious overtone to it? Probably, but I'm not making this up. This is the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This is conference approved material. Now we're at step three. We say the third step prayer, and then after the third step prayer, we say this. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Utterly to him. You got to look up the word utterly. That's like really. Like, that's like serious. That's like utterly. Like, after you do it utterly, there's like nothing left over. We're talking monk. We're talking priest. We're talking utterly. We're talking about no reservation. Forget about it. We're talking, you're wearing that monk outfit and all that sort of crazy stuff. You know what I mean? I know it's, you know what the terrible thing is? You know why I hate this? You know why it's, because like I'm reading from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what makes it so crazy. I'm reading from this book. You hear none of this in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, everything you hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous tries to water this down or says it's not important or forget about this stuff. And then you read what's actually in the book. It's in your face, and you say, wait a second. What's this? Wait a second. What is this? This is like the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. That's your basis. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that as we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. Same thing we've been saying all the way through this. We never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. So I go to these meetings and I talk about this stuff all the time. So I get an email from God. You know, you're talking too much about God. Should I apologize to him? I don't know. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't apologize for that stuff. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith needs courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. They say it again. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. This is after the fifth step. We return home and find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, having carefully reviewed what we have done. we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. It's getting to know him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn the page, which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. If we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. That's not an archway to freedom. You know, they're talking about it again. Is our work solid so far? Have the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Have we watered this thing down? Have we said it's something that it's not? You know, have we started, instead of playing games with the word God, and said, well, it's not really God, it's like the banana, you know, or the tree. Or I mean, are we watering this thing down so it's something that's acceptable? I mean, it's something that it's not even using the English language correctly. But we just don't want to surrender. Listen, here's the bottom line. Nobody gets away with anything. Here's the bottom line. You can either do what they did and get what they got, or not do what they did and get what you get. I mean, it's not a matter of, listen, you're big boys and girls, the AA police, I'm not going to come down and say you're not doing this thing right. You know, we're fining you or you're going to jail. You're just going to suffer for your life. That's all. You're just not going to get. You're just not going to be rocking in the fourth. You're just going to be the one who's 60 years old and on your fourth marriage. You know, you're going to be the one who's lonely. You're going to be the one who's hanging in there. It's all going to rebound. It's your karma that's hurting. It's not me. I'm just carrying a message. I'm just reading a book. You're the one who's refusing to do what they did and not going to get what they got. And this ain't a dress rehearsal. This is your life. This is what you're fooling. This is what you're. So when you say, well, my life isn't turning out like this, I'm not being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, I'm not experiencing much of heaven, you have nobody to blame but you. You have nobody to blame but you. It's your deal. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, and every day is a day we must carry a vision of God's will into our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And then we'll do a little skipping around over here. But what about the new man? You don't want to scare the new man off. Okay, here it is, working with others. That often... It's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol tones, material needs are cared for it. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon God, other people, ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the conscience of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, the only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. It says burn the idea. If you're a sponsor, you're not burning that idea into him. You're not being hey, listen, you know what they did in the beginning? I told you what they did in the beginning. They took him upstairs to the room. They said, get down on your knees. All you have to do is read Dr. Bond. Get down on your knees and give your life to God. Now, it may not seem like a big deal, but it was a real qualifier once they got in the meetings. Not too many people were laughing about the God thing. You know, really, once they have you down on your knees in front of the six men, and you say, I give my life to God, and all that sort of stuff, and they get down to the big room, not a lot of arguments about the third step. Not a lot of, well, I'm spiritual but not religious stuff. They were, like, focused. They were serious. That's why they had a 95% success rate in Cleveland. 95% of people never drank again. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people, it is dependent upon his relationship with God. We're on page 100 now. Then you get all the way over to Vision for You. I mean, it's pretty consistent all the way through. You know, you can see the deal. It says this, okay. Still, you may say, I will not have the benefit of contact with you. Write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you really must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. There he is again. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He's even going to show you who to hang out with. You know why? Because you're not smart enough to know who to hang out with. Because the people you want to hang out with are the wrong people, and they're telling you the wrong things. The people you don't want to hang out with are the people that are telling you right things, but you don't like it. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will eventually disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him, there he is again, is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. There's that great fact again. And this is on the last page. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the records of the past. Keep freely of what you have and join us. We'll be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. May God bless you and keep you until then. And if that wasn't enough, Dr. Bob, the co-founder, says if you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or of any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for you. You know? He was a real radical. You know, lucky you don't want to be sponsored by him. Your heavenly father will never let you down. And somebody handled this as one of my, well, I already talked about this part of the book. And then we go on. Now maybe when you're about 15 years sober, when I was about 15 years sober, I started reading this book. Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I'm not going to read the whole thing or anything like that, but I'm not going to read it. I can't read you this whole thing and everything I want to read you in here. You ought to read this thing and see what this thing was all about, but I'll read you a couple parts here. Let me see. By the way, does anybody know what the subject for the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was? Anybody know the subject? You know, it's in this book. The first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Did you know that? This is on page 218. This is conference-approved material. This is the first meeting of AA. There is no record of what happened at the first meeting, except for a grapevine account years later noting that it was led by Dr. Bob, who put his foot on the rung of a dining room chair, identified himself as an alcoholic, and began reading the Sermon on the Mount. It's Matthew 5, 6, and 7. You know, I've read the Bible in the AA meetings. I mean, if Dr. Bob could do it, I guess I could do it. Did you know that the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was they read the Bible? Because they didn't have the big book. They read the Bible. That's what they did. You know, he said, really, I haven't seen a person fail who was thoroughly followed on path. That was their path. They read the Bible. You go through all this. I'm not even going to quote all the things they talk about as far as that's concerned. Now it talks about meetings after that. When the time came, the speaker would go, this is page 220. When the time came, the speaker would go up front, wait for quiet, and introduce himself. He opened with a prayer of his own choosing, then gave a five-minute lead. Usually it would be on a specific subject, a passage from the upper room, or a verse from the Bible. Then he asked other members to make short comments. There was no levity in the beginning, said Bobby. We all had our sense of humor, but for us, recovery was a life-or-death matter. Nor was there any clapping. At the kind of meeting, applause would have seemed out of place. On page 222, I don't believe I have any right to get cocky about getting sober, Dr. Bob said. It's only through God's grace that I did it. I can feel very thankful that I was privileged to do it. If my strength does come from him, who am I to get cocky about it? Now we're going to go on to 7. You know, I we talk about doing step 7. You know, I'm of the opinion you don't really, I'm not even sure what it means to do step 7. I think step 7 sort of happens to you. It's going to happen, listen, it's going to happen, if you're alive on this planet, it's going to, you know, I've had cancer twice. Listen to me. A bunch of you guys are going to get cancer. I've had money problems a bunch of times. Listen to me. You guys are going to have money problems. Or you're going to get sick. I've had relation problems. I've had problems with my kids. I've got problems. You got every problem I have, you're going to have. And you're going to have some problems that I haven't had. And I'm going to have some problems you're going to have. Your life from now until the day you die is going to be bereft with problems. So trust me, God is working on you big time. You know? You know, you are, anybody who reads this deal is saying, well, now that I'm sober, I won't have problems, is missing the deal, okay? Listen, here's what you won't have. If you work this thing, you won't have problems associated with drinking, okay? You won't, because they don't arrest you for driving while coveting, or driving while worrying, or driving, they won't arrest you for that. You understand what I'm saying? So you won't have the drinking problems. But problems will come out of the air, whether you caused them or not. Although some of the problems will still be because you caused them, because you didn't pay the. Because, you know, listen, I had my credit cards taken away at 9 years because apparently, if you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. Did you know that? I didn't know that. You know what I mean? I just spent it if I could charge it. You know, I bought more things I didn't need for people I didn't like with money I didn't have than you could possibly imagine. Okay, because I was worried about whether they'll like me, whether I need, you know, because when you're not when you're nothing. and you really want to be something, and you got to be something instead of being nothing, you buy the shirt even if you can't afford it. You know, I had to learn that you could live life without credit cards. You know what that means? That means if you have the money in your pocket, you can buy it. If you don't, you don't buy it. You live within your means. Not living within your means is a sign of living a dishonest life. It's done by dishonest people, you know, because they need to, because they're addicted to having stuff to add on to themselves because they feel crappy about themselves the way they are. And it's just as much alcoholism as drinking, except they can't arrest you for it. And you don't think of it as alcoholism because all your friends are doing it anyway. It's just the stuff you whine about at AA meetings. You know, until somehow 15 or 20 years later, if you grow up on this stuff, you start connecting the dots, and you see that's just as much part of the disease as anything else. So it says right here, it says, this step so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and what the practice of it means to us. Indeed, the attainment of greater humility is the foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps. I don't know much about humility, but I know a lot about humiliation. You know, I just know about that stuff. And what does it say right here as far as the new perspective? It says, for us, the process of getting a new perspective about ourselves and who we are and what we are is unbelievably painful. Has anybody gone, since they've gotten sober, gone through any painful stuff? There you go. Okay, there you go. You see, it's working. It's working. Now, if you haven't gone through any painful stuff yet, I've got some good news for you. If you haven't gone through some real painful, 3 o'clock in the morning, I think I'm going to die, I want to drink, but I don't want to drink, what am I going to do with my life? I've got some good news for you. It's coming. It's on the way. Don't worry about it, okay? And after it comes, it's going to come again. It's going to keep on coming until you figured it out. Or drink or die. You'll figure it out. It is only by, here it says, for us, the process of getting a new perspective was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. So if you say, if you want to call up New York and say there's some old timer here, you know, or whatever I am at 31 years, killing newcomers, telling them they're going to suffer, telling them it's going to be horrible because he's reading from the 12 and 12. And it's scaring people. Well, you better call them up and maybe they'll send the AA police to come and get me. As a matter of fact, it says, here's the good deal. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Oh, thank you, Lord. Make me broke again. It's like I was talking to Ray O'Keefe one day and I said, well, when am I going to be financially secure? He said, never. You're never going to be financially secure. I said, no, the big book says, you know, in the promises, I'll be financially secure. He says, no, it doesn't say that, Russell. He says, it does. It says, I'm going to lose financial insecurity. He says, it doesn't say that. He said, read it. So I picked up the book and read it. He says, you'll lose the fear of financial insecurity. He says, Russell, you're always going to be broke. It just won't bother you. I said, oh, thanks. I appreciate that. You know what that means? That means you can be broke. You can be, if you're broke now, you can experience the promises as long as it doesn't bother you. You know, guys come up to me and they start complaining to me about stuff. They complain to me about terrible problems. I said, well, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? He says, what do you mean? Well, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? What do you mean if it didn't bother me? Well, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? What do you mean, if it didn't bother me? He said, yeah, if it didn't bother you. You mean if the guy bouncing the check on me didn't bother me, how would I feel? I said, yeah, how would you feel? He said, wait a second. You mean if... How would I feel if it didn't bother you? How would you feel if it didn't bother you? Well, if it didn't bother me, I'd feel okay. So there you go. There you go. Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something. No matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. You know, I know it's kind of Zen, kind of crazy stuff. Well, that's what you're involved in. Then in A, we looked and listened. Everywhere we saw failure, misery, transformed humility, and priceless assets. It says right here. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We're like thumb-sucking crybabies. The whining, the crying, the gnashing of teeth, the whining about our problems, the crying of it's like fleeing, the feeling sorry for ourselves. It's all the wrong deal. It never made it better. It only makes it worse. And we do it like automatically. And anybody who tries to stop us, you know what a good sponsor says? Here's what a good, you ready for, you know, for a good sponsor? Good, I'll tell you, this is my opinion. Good sponsor. Guy comes up to you and stops whining and crying about something. I say, why don't you shut up? Why don't you shut up?
He's done that.
Why don't you go drink? Why don't you shut up? You know what? Are you some sort of crybaby? Why don't you just shut up? Why don't you go drink? You 8-year-old child. Why don't you go drink? I know love and tolerance is our code. Why don't you go? You know why I say that to guys? Because I love them. Because I care about them. Because I don't want to see them die. Now, here's a bad sponsor. Oh, what happened? Oh, tell me more. It's only been 3 hours. Can you repeat it again? I cannot believe this is happening to you. This is a serious problem. Let's call up Fred and we'll talk about it. Now, let me tell you something. Now, I know there's a few guys that are going to run away when you say shut up. You understand? We call them the boys. They're not ready for this deal. They don't want this deal. But some guys, when you say shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, why don't you go help somebody else? Why don't you make coffee? Why don't you shut up? Why don't you do something? Why don't you do the steps? Why don't you start getting serious? Some guys, after 10 or 20 or 30 times, they're going to keep on coming back. They're going to learn that in here, whining and crying and feeling sorry for yourself is not acceptable behavior. Man up, shut up, or woman up, or whatever it is, and, you know, start accepting what's going on and start looking at the stuff we're looking at here. And, you know, put that other stuff out of your mind and try to help other people. And when they start seeing that's unacceptable, when they start accepting, they start doing it. You want to know something? All of a sudden, it doesn't bother them anymore. You know? And all of a sudden, they're talking at meetings, and they're sharing their story, and they're sharing their testimony. And God's coming up, and he says, man, that happened to me. How did you do it? And I said, I don't know. I had a sponsor. He told me to shut up. It says, we never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape from the body of the Bible was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. In here, we learned the value of suffering. Can you imagine that, the value of suffering? Well, listen, if you learn that there's value to suffering, and you believe there's value to suffering, and you see every time you've suffered and you've gone through something, as long as you trust in God and you have a relationship with God, and you really do have a relationship with God, and it draws you closer, just like in the book of James, which is one of the books that they said was the fundamental books. It says, rejoice when you have trials. Because when you have trials and you persevere through it, it strengthens your faith in God. You know, it strengthens your faith in this deal. It makes you mature. So the bottom line is you get through, as you see that in suffering, it really may feel bad. It may be a horrible thing, but somehow you start believing that this really is going to turn out okay. It's going to be better for me. If you start believing that, in other words, if even bad things you realize will be good for you, if you follow this program and you trust in God, then you never have a bad day. Because if it's good, it's good, and if it's bad, it's good. So it's always good. On his desk, Dr. Bob had a plaque defining humility. And this is what the plaque said. Perpetual quietness of heart. It is to have no trouble. It is to never be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me. And when I am blamed or despised, it is to have a blessed home in myself where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret and be at peace, as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and about is seeming trouble. That's what Dr. Bob had on his desk about humility. That's what it feels to have that. The guys that I don't want to use the word worship, but I looked up to in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what they had. I didn't even know what they had, but they were always steady. In cancer, you know what they were like? Steady. The wives would leave them, they were steady. They had money problems, they were steady. They were not up and down. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm used to up, down, sideways, mad, all that sort of stuff. You know, and I'm not even saying, and believe me, I'm not saying, well, you know, look at me, I finally arrived or I've got that thing now. You know, you catch me on a bad moment, a bad day or whatever it is, you know, I can get a little crazy too. You know, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm not using that as an excuse. That's just the way I am. But compared to the way it was, the new freedom, the new happiness, like a yo-yo, like a banana, compared to the way it was, the way I am now, because of this seven-step deal. So what it really is sort of like an attitude born of faith. Born of this, making the decision in the sixth step that you're going to really make a serious effort to make God the central fact of your life and to really focus on that and finding his will. What may it do? It may have to do with joining a church. You know, I mean, I know that sounds crazy, right? Coming from the Bible. No, it's not crazy because in our big book, just because the wisdom of the room says you don't talk about it, in our big book it says it endorses church membership. It says the family afterwards. He says you're going to have incredible experiences for you and the congregation as long as you don't argue. You know why? Because they want you to go out there and get more and experiencing more. I know in AA we think the only people that know anything about God or know anything about God or the most God-fearing and wonderful people in the room are the crazy alcoholics that we have in here. I know we understand that, and nobody else has got any kind of handle on this. Let me tell you something. There's a lot of wisdom and good people out there. That's why Bill Wilson's sponsor was like, a shoemaker, you know, or Ed Dowling, or, you know, was a Jesuit priest, and that's why he talks about him in here. And if you read this book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times, you ought to read about what they were doing the first 4 years, what they were actually doing, who they were hanging out with, you know, and that's why. And in the book, they map all this stuff out. You know what the problem is? Is Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship as a whole, as you filter this book and what it says through the fellowship, it strains out all the stuff that seems a little tough. It strains out all the stuff that seems a little tough, you know, and it homogenizes it so it's like milk. It doesn't even seem, it's not even meat. And we're looking for things that have great weight and great depth. So you start reading the material. Now, I understand, you know, you may not start doing this until you have 10 or 15 years, until you have 5 years or whatever it is, until you have time. You know, I'm not saying that somebody who has like 2 weeks is going to digest this stuff, but this is a step meeting that we're in. We're in a step meeting here. This is on the seventh step. I'm not going to tailor this thing to the youngest guy in the room, you know. I'm going to tailor this thing to the guy that wants it the most. I mean, that's the way this thing works. There's a guy, there may be 50 guys in here that say, I don't want to hear this bullshit. What is this guy talking about? I don't care about this. I promise you, I know the truth. There's at least one guy or one gal in here who's saying, this is the kind of crap I want to hear about. This is the stuff I'm interested in. He's the guy I'm talking about because he's the only one who's going to be around in 20 years. That's the guy I'm talking about. He's the guy who's going to be doing this meeting when I'm long dead, talking about this stuff. That's the guy I'm talking to, that guy, the hungriest guy in the room who really wants this deal. Not the guy who's just a dilettante just playing around with this thing. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about step eight.